Hello, I'm Paul Michael Glazer, and you are watching Mr. Media.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Tampa Bay Times journalist Jeff Klinkenberg. He's just published a new collection of his award-winning work, Alligators in B-Flat, Improbable Tales from the Files of Real Florida. Stick around, but not too close. Daily bathing may not be a common trait among the swamp people whose lives are often celebrated in Klink's work. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. The show is brought to you today by Amazon.com, the world's greatest store for everything from books and movies to computers, TVs, and even my favorite soft drink, Pepsi Wild Cherry. Thinking about buying something online from Amazon or just want to do a little window shopping? You can save yourself a lot of money and help support Mr. Media, that's me, by clicking on one of the Amazon ads at MrMedia.com and start your shopping with us. Get yourself the new iPad or Kindle Fire. Feeling a little racy today? Amazon's got what you need to feel exciting and new, as they used to sing on The Love Boat. Remember, start your next shopping trip from the comfort of your own home, car, hotel, or office with Amazon.com at MrMedia.com. That's right, MrMedia.com. And folks, thanks for your support. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of people who can turn almost anything on four legs into a backwoods, candlelit, gourmet meal for two. Cue the Deliverance soundtrack. In the Noonan Media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. They don't create journalists like Jeff Klinkenberg much anymore. And they aren't opening any new newspapers with the budget or patience to send a reporter and a photographer into the backwoods anymore in hopes that they might find a captivating story or two. Now, Klinkenberg, or just Klink to anyone who spent more than 5 minutes in his gentle presence, has enjoyed a remarkable freedom to roam the back roads and small towns of Florida during more than 35 years with the Tampa Bay Times. And in the latest bound collection of his newspaper stories, Alligators in B-Flat, Improbable Tales from the Files of Real Florida, Klink once again takes readers from the flatlands of the Florida Everglades to the legendary mountains of Chesty Morgan and down deep into the water hazards of the state's numerous golf courses. And, of course, he's always, always, folks, up to his ass in alligators, mosquitoes, and roadkill. Every week in the Times, Klink introduces loyal readers to beloved Floridians such as Oil Boy and Conrad Yankee, or he'll take us to one of his favorite places, from Max Fish Camp to Gatorama, from which the book's catchy title comes. Now, what ties each of these stories together is the respect Klink gives each and every one of his subjects, no matter how bizarre or how far off the beaten path their lives have taken them. No matter where you live, you'll marvel at the stories he has to tell. Jeff Klinkenberg, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, and I could listen to you all day. Do I really have to say anything? Just keep it up.
Oh, very nice, Jeff. Coming from you, I take that as high praise, so thank you. Probably kissing up a little too much, but I'll just take it for what it's worth. Thank you. So, Jeff, we've known each other a long time. Know my wife better. She works at the Times. I should get that out of the way. But I've always wondered, I mean, are there days over the years when the vein of Real Florida stories kind of dries up and you just want to go, I don't know, cover an Indian Shores town council meeting or something just for laughs?
No, on the Indian Shores city council, although I'm sure it's pretty interesting at times and I wouldn't rule it out. But generally speaking, there's no end to the Florida culture things when I think about it. Now, sometimes I don't have something right now that I want to write about. Sometimes it takes a couple of days to find something. But Florida's a pretty big place. It's got a very interesting culture. We've got lots of critters. You know, the thing that makes Florida so interesting, not only to me, but to writers, is just this this amazing diversity we have. And, I mean, think of it, you know, Bob. We're in St. Petersburg, Florida. The second, the most densely populated county in the state of Florida. We live in Florida, 19 million people. We have great restaurants. We have museums. We've got fine universities. We've got major league sports, hospitals. We have all these things that we think of as culture, high culture, civilization. Yet, we do know that if we went swimming at the wrong place and the wrong time, we could be eaten by dinosaurs. And while I don't wish that on anybody, maybe a few people, but for the most part, not everybody. It just makes us this whole different place. I mean, we have, the last couple of years, we've seen crocodiles in Tampa Bay. We have more bears in Florida than we've had for many years. We have lions, the Florida Panthers. So, so we do have these bizarre zombie people or whatever, but we also, underneath that, you've got this, what I call real Florida, and you've got that culture on top of it, or the popular culture on top of it, but deep down, Florida is still there. So it's what attracts me as a writer, this push and pull of this modern Florida kind of trying to push out the old, and then the old, whether it's a hurricane or something, pushing back hard. So that's what I do, and I mean, you know, people like Carl Hiaasen and Tim Dorsey, we sort of feed on that dynamic too. Me through nonfiction, and the other two through fiction.
Well, and of course, that's the thing about Tim and Carl and their work is things have gotten so weird at times in Florida over the years. You're never really sure if they're writing fiction or nonfiction. You at least acknowledge these are real people. This is real Florida. Tim and Carl, you know, you could probably make a case that there are probably people represented, real people represented in those books of theirs.
I think to a degree, and Carl always says that I don't have to make this up. I will say though, that sometimes, as someone who's lived in Florida for a long time, since I was 2 years old, 1951, my parents moved to Miami, I resent a little bit that's become the national narrative. You know, that weird Florida is the national narrative. The hanging chads, the flesh-eating zombies, the bizarre trailer park crimes and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's certainly part of Florida culture, but it's not the whole thing. Florida's a pretty complicated place, as you know, and there's all kinds of folks and places here. So, I mean, that's what my work tries to reflect, this whole huge diversity. So you do have people like Lillian Stello, also known as Jesse Morgan, mm-hmm. who comes down here, who settles like so many Floridians do, or so many people end up here. But, you know, you also have the alligators in B flat. So it's quite the gig, really. It's quite the gig.
So how do you decide what and who fits your definition of real Florida? Because it's pretty broad. And then at the same time, how much freedom – this is, I guess this is two questions – but how much freedom do you have to choose the subjects – of your pieces every week, or you know, whenever they're going to run. You've been out in the field so long. Can you pretty much decide on your own, or do you still have to go through someone to say, you know, this is what I want to write about? Is that okay? Or have you passed that point?
Well, it's. I mean, I pretty much generate my own ideas. Though I'm always. I've had some good editors, and who suggest things, and I say yes, that sounds terrific. But I. You know, there's an ongoing communication with my editors. My editor now is a guy named Bill Durier, who's very smart mm-hmm. And curious. And so I would say, generally speaking, he knows what I'm going to do. You know, I tell him, I'm interested in this, and here's why. I've lived here a long time. I have a really highly developed sense of place. What belongs in Florida, and sometimes what doesn't. And both of those things can be interesting. When I'm looking for something to write about, sometimes I'm thinking about what time of year is it? What's the season? And I know a lot of people don't think Florida has seasons, but I would disagree. I think we have very distinct seasons.
Hot, hotter, and hottest.
Hot, hotter, hottest. But birds, fish, certainly the climate, what we're eating, you know, what we're hearing. So I'm looking for those things. Mm-hmm. Because in a way, I'm sort of an interpreter of Florida for readers. I'm part of this old history, this old travel writing tradition that, you know, goes back to the 18th century in Florida with a guy named William Bartram, who was from Philadelphia but came down through the South and stayed a while in Florida, and to basically do an inventory of the flora and fauna, but finally wrote this book called Travels. It's been in print since 1791. It's really interesting. And then there were people like Harry Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, but lived here for 18 winters in the late 19th century, and up in North Florida, and kind of wrote about what she was experiencing. Of course, it was winter, so the smell of orange blossoms was in the air. There weren't too many problems with mosquitoes, but she gave the nation a kind of a look at Florida. She was sort of the first writer who, she kind of wrote come-ons. You know, she would say, wow, property is really cheap here, you know. So I always blame her for the traffic on Howard Franklin at 5 p.m. Rawlings, there were a lot of people. And then when I was a kid in Miami, traveling a little bit with my parents, newspapers had somebody like me. The Stewart News had this, the editor was a guy named Ernie Lyons, who wrote these wonderful little columns about what it was like to live in Florida. So it was pretty folksy, but, you know, the fried mullet, the raccoons coming in the backyard, that kind of stuff. Nixon Smiley at the Miami Herald sort of wrote a history column, and then later a guy named Al Burt, who was sort of a model for me when I was a young journalist, where I wanted to be Al Burt. And then Al eventually retired, but I talked to him, I wrote him, and he was very encouraging to do, encouraged me to do what I do. But now, I feel like I'm the last of the Mohegans, and other newspapers certainly write about Florida if there's an alligator attack or something like that. But the day-to-day stuff is just sort of ignored. So I'm lucky to do what I do because it really, we're talking about the Huck Finn life. Mm-hmm. But I think it's good for Floridians, it's good for readers to be able to understand their state a little better.
How often over the years have you, you know, you've been out, you've found someone that you thought was going to be really good or something, it was going to be a really good piece, and then you've gone out and you've gone to develop it and spend time with the person or the place or the thing, and you've come back to the office to write about it, and you've gone, you know, it just didn't quite meet the sniff test. It seemed like a great idea, and I spent a lot of time, but I don't know if there's a story there. Does that happen very often? Or
it doesn't happen very often. And it, you know, years ago when I was very young and had more energy, when I was writing two or three columns a week, sometimes that was the case because you just needed something. You needed to, as we say in the business, you needed to feed the beast. I would say it happens very rarely now. The opposite sometimes is true. I have something that I'm just dying to write, and I know there's a great story, but the person, for some reason, doesn't want to talk. It's a little bit nervous or whatever. And so there's a number of these stories out there just waiting for me or for someone to write. There's one I've been working on one for 2 years. I've done an interview and I don't want to give my stories away, but it's a guy who lives in Tarpon Springs who was a songwriter for Sun Records and wrote a song for Elvis.
Wow.
He's an old man now, and he doesn't even like to talk about secular music. He feels it's sinful music. We've had a number of conversations. I've gone to his house. I've listened to what he plays now, which I think is wonderful. But then I think, all right, he's going to let me do this, but then he changes his mind. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping I'll be able to do that before he passes. I'd love to document that part of his life.
Well, if that Elvis story doesn't work, you know, our local Fox 13 news anchor Kelly Ring, her mom used to date Elvis.
Oh gosh!
So you know,
interesting. Wow!
I'll hand that one off to you. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry though; I interrupted you.
But you know, some of these stories do take a lot of time because the people have these mixed emotions about talking to you. Some don't. I would say most don't. Most are a little bewildered. I mean, most of the people I write about have never been interviewed before. They don't think they're extraordinary. Mm-hmm. They wonder why somebody like me is interested in telling their story. And I'm one of those people who thinks that everybody has a story. Mm-hmm. So those people are often delighted to take me out and show me their world, whatever it is. You know, it might be driving through the woods. It might be wading in a swamp. It might be me going with them into a church. You know, they're trying to show me what it's like to be them and what they enjoy doing. And I'm always kind of looking for the big picture. There's stories that are kind of obvious. You know, here's a guy selling honey on the side of the road up in North Florida. Mm-hmm. I drive past him many times. I stop many times to buy honey from him, Tupelo honey, up near Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. Whenever you buy honey and you're leaving, he says, here's something for the road, and he tucks a little piece of paper in your pocket. And it's a religious tract. So we have this roadside relationship. So one day I decide I'm going to stop and really talk to him. And it turns out he's got this amazing story of tragedy. Hmm. So the story begins with this guy selling honey, but then you look at it and it grows into something else, into something Shakespearean. Hmm. And so those are cool when they happen. So that's just me driving down a road, seeing somebody. I think I wonder if that person is interesting, and I stop, and indeed they are.
And that story, I'll point out, is in the book, Alex.
It is in the book, yeah. Yes. Now, a couple years ago, one of my editors, Kelly Benham, mm-hmm. Said that she had a friend who had been in a Publix in St. Petersburg, and she'd been in the cake aisle, and she bumped into this tiny woman very talkative, who was there to buy cake mix. And this woman was very chatty and let it slip that she had once been in show business. She'd been a burlesque. Mm-hmm. She'd been in the burlesque. She was an exotic dancer who called herself Chesty Morgan. So Kelly tells me one day, hey, there's this woman named Chesty Morgan who lives in St. Petersburg. She's old now, but she lives here. And so I Google her, and she was known as the woman with the world's largest breasts, natural breasts.
Now, wait a minute, Jeff, I got to interrupt for a second. You know who Bunny Yeager is. You know who Betty Page is, both of whom spent a lot of time in Florida. Are you going to honestly tell me you didn't know who Chesty Morgan was? I'm not buying that. I'm sorry. I mean, I could understand that maybe you had to go look up the exact dimensions of her chest, but you had to know who Chesty Morgan was.
I think I'd heard her name, but I really didn't know that, say, she'd been in a Fellini film.
Okay.
Or something. I mean, I didn't know.
Got to do your background.
And you know, she had kind of the late 60s and the 70s had been her time in the limelight, as we'll say. So I didn't know her like I knew Bunny. Oh, be still my heart, Bunny Yeager. But anyway, so I hear about this woman, Bunny Yeager, Chesty Morgan, who lives in St. Petersburg. So initially, I just want to look her up and see if she'll talk to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about her at this point. I know nothing. I haven't Googled her. And so I try to find out who she is and whatever. And I do find out that her name is Lillian Stello. And there's a phone number. And I call her. She has a sweet Polish accent. And I tell her who I am, and I would love to talk to her. Someone told me she lives here, blah, 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 blah. And she's very reluctant, but she finally says, okay, but we'll meet at Publix. So I meet her at Publix, and we walk around. She's doing a little shopping. We walk through the aisles, and then we sit out in front, and she tells me her story, and whoa, it turns out she's a Holocaust survivor and a life beyond tragic. And she's very open about her life. And so we end up talking for a couple of hours at Publix. And then she lets slip that she likes to walk every day to stay in shape. And so I ask if I can walk with her, and we do that. And she's carrying this, she has this little waist pack that she carries her things in. And I ask what's in there, and she opens it up, and she, you know, she has her ID and all that, but she also has aspirin. And I said, what's that for? And she says, well, it's for my back. My breasts is so large, I have back problems, you know. So that's sort of an interesting thing. And she, you know, she's just very open about talking about that, you know. She thought about reductions, but she didn't get it, and she, you know, she didn't trust doctors, blah, 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 blah. And then a couple times I go over to her house, and you know, you start to build this, you start to get to know her, and you see that all these terrible things that have happened to her in her life, she just doesn't trust happiness. She doesn't trust people in general, and she made a lot of money dancing, and so she owns a lot of property. But she doesn't like to hire people to repair the property. She likes to she likes to do all the repairs herself, you know. So, you know, one day I was on a roof with her while she was tarring a roof. Chesty Morgan was tarring a roof with yellow gloves on full of tar, you know. And I said to her, Lillian, I never saw your act. What did you do? And she said, oh, honey, I have better costume than Liberace. And I come in the back of the room, and I take the gloves off and everything. And so she sort of was, you know, it was very surreal to see her, to you know, pantomiming some of those things on the roof of an apartment building. You know, also went to the Holocaust Museum with her, where she sometimes goes and kind of gives testimony. But it turned into you know, what I thought was a powerful profile of that person. Very, you know, it was not the kind of thing you would have expected, you know. She would get nervous because I probably interviewed her over a month's time, if not more, you know. And she would suddenly she would get nervous. She couldn't have been a more public person. Think about it. You know, she took her clothes off. You can't get more public than that. But
only her top. Only her top. Yes. Never the bottom. Yes.
But then she was in her 70s, late 70s, and lives in this community and has friends and has a daughter who's a lawyer and grandchildren, and she starts to get nervous. And one day she called me, and she was nervous about the story being in the paper, afraid that a bad man come to my house and kill me. And I said, you know, Lillian, I don't think that's going to happen. I've written about many people. And I don't think anybody's going to read this story and come and kill you. So anyway, it published. And, you know, when I write a story, sometimes people call you up and they say, the subjects, they'll call you up and they'll say, I really like that, or I like most of that, or sometimes, you know, I didn't like that. but I heard nothing from her. And I really liked her. I really had a lot of empathy for her, for what she had gone through, and some admiration. You know, she was sort of a feminist in the way that Madonna was a feminist. You know, she did what she thought she had to support her children. Mm-hmm. She was a widow. So I didn't hear from her, and finally I couldn't stand it. So I called her. Mm-hmm. And I said, Lillian, this is Jeff Klinkenberg, you know. I just wanted to know if you saw the story. And she said, oh, honey. She always called me honey. She said, oh, honey, I wish you could have given me a better write-up. And I was sort of crushed. I thought, oh. I said, Lillian, I worked so hard on this, you know, to be compassionate, whatever. And she said, I just did not like the pictures, so she objected to the. She thought the photographs were not flattering enough. But I've sent her a book. I haven't heard from her, but I think I probably will call her and just check with her because I did like her.
Yeah,
she kind of kooky politics as far as I was concerned. She loved those Fox boys, you know, Sean Hannity. Yeah. And
a little weird.
Bill O'Reilly. In fact, she said, oh, Sean Hannity, I would like to marry him. So, but.
Well, and, you know, Jeff, it's funny. I remember when the story ran. First of all, you know, I knew who Chesty Morgan was as a longtime Playboy reader and young degenerate, I guess, from my youth. But it was interesting that to read the story and. My daughter and her granddaughter have been classmates. They're the same age, have been classmates for 12 years. And so to put two and two together, it was just very interesting. I've never discussed the story with her daughter. But, you know, it was just like, wow. It was one of those times where, you know, you find something out about someone you think that you've known and you don't know anything. And
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's the greatness about a lot of these stories. I need to... Before we run out of time, and unfortunately we will, I just want to ask you a little bit about the dedication of the book. It is to Eugene Patterson, Pulitzer Prize winner. He was an editor at the Atlanta Constitution for many years in the 60s and then came to the St. Pete Times, a neighbor of mine, for what it's worth, for many years, and he was always very kind to myself and my wife. Why and he recently passed away. But why the dedication to Gene of all people? I mean, you've known a lot of people who probably had a lot of impact on your career. What? Why Gene?
Well, he hired me in 1977 to come to the Times, and I'd had a career before then in Miami. I covered professional football, which, you know, a lot of young reporters would think of as the great the crowning achievement. You know, I was a sports writer. Though, after a while, I found it a little boring because I wanted to do some storytelling, and covering pro football was like covering Hollywood. It was sort of celebrity journalism. So I started writing about the outdoors in Miami because I thought the people there, the fishermen, hunters, campers, with really interesting stories, I thought they were going to be, it was going to be great to write about real people. And so I did that. It didn't quite work out as well because I had to write 5 or 6 a week. So you really didn't have a chance to develop much. But Patterson hired me, thanks to a guy named Hubert Mizell, who's a sports editor. And he encouraged me like no other editor has encouraged me. He was a great writer, as you know. And there was something about him, about his leadership to writers especially. If he read something that he liked, he would come to your desk and tell you. He would send you these notes. And they just meant the world to me. An old Miami swamp boy with a low self-esteem. And but it wasn't just me. I mean, he really loved writers and good writing. And so he really helped my career. And he was the guy who was happy to let me write this Florida culture thing. And, interestingly, I mean, we kept in touch over the years after he retired in the late 80s. And it's always sort of a tonic to talk to him. And I have to tell you, I mean, you know, what I do is an odd thing. We've already talked about how you don't see this much in Florida anymore. You don't see it at all, really. But in journalism in general, I mean, these are not mainstream stories that I write. They're, I'm not even sure what they are. They're not newspaper stories. I know that, right. You know. And but there's something about them that that readers like and that Patterson liked, and he would tell me that. And so over the years, you know, there have been attempts to reform me, you know, to make me write more off the news, a popular culture. And I've been kind of stubborn and just kind of hung on to this. And part of that was Patterson kind of giving me the courage to do that. So I loved him. I loved him.
He's a good guy. I actually interviewed him about a week or two before he passed. I didn't know he was ill at the time, so it was kind of a shock. He actually filled me in on the phone. I was surprised after that his daughter had put him on, but I was glad that I got to speak to him. And he was always very gracious. Well, we're going to run out of time. So, folks, listen, you can find Jeff Klinkenberg's new book, Alligators in B-Flat, Improbable Tales from the Files of Real Florida, at great online retailers or bookstores, real bookstores, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching the video, right below this video, right over here, right over there, is you'll see an image of the cover of the book. All you have to do is click on it. It'll take you to Amazon.com. You can buy the book right now, have it delivered. Don't even have to leave your couch, the toilet, wherever you happen to be watching the show. So get it right now, Alligators in B-Flat. Jeff, do you have a website besides the Times where your stories are? Is there someplace people can...
Well, I do. It's old. I'm working on it now, but it's jeffklinkenberg.com. But it's sort of a work in progress. But people can go there and find out a few little secrets about me. Right. But... and listen, don't read my book on the toilet. There are chips. I have computer chips in there, and I will know. And we'll talk about it later, Bob.
Well, I thought you were going to say don't read it on the toilet because of the, especially if you're in Florida, the propensity for alligators to come up from the toilet. And
Yeah. Anything can happen here, man. I don't want to have to write about you in that way.
No, I would never read your book on the toilet. Oh, heaven forbid. No. Well, listen, Jeff, always a pleasure to see you. Great to have you on the show. Congratulations on the book. And thanks for joining us in Mr. Media today.
Thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Same here.
Bye.
Bye. Thousand Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJs, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJs or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJs.com. And tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.